Welcome everyone to episode 200 of the Reds Unrestricted podcast. I'm your host David Comerford and I'm joined by Liam Tower as we analyse Liverpool's 5-1 win over Sparta Prague in the Europa League.
This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
So it is the 200th episode of the Reds Unrestricted podcast, and what better to discuss than a 5-1 win in the Europa League round of 16 against Sparta Prague. A very prestigious tie indeed. Liverpool made light work of it. Alexis McAllister opening the scoring from the penalty spot after about 5 minutes. Darwin Nunez then midway through the first half and in first half stoppage time. So really it felt like not only match but also tie over when the teams headed down the tunnel for the break. Sparta Prague, perfect start to second half for them as they tried to give themselves some hope. Conor Bradley scoring an own goal moments after coming on, but Luis Diaz quickly restored the three-goal advantage, and then substitute Dominic Szoboszlai made it 5 for Liverpool. And I'd never normally say this, but Liverpool are through to the quarterfinals at this stage, which is obviously a big benefit at this stage of the season, which we'll come on to a little bit later in the podcast. So the man with the esteemed honour of being the guest on our 200th episode, Liam, I'll come to you now for your three-head match review and your assessment of that performance on a night where Liverpool, like I said, I've pretty much got the job done already.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree, and I'd be the same as you. I wouldn't normally be getting too ahead of myself, but even I can't see, you know, anything other than the job, you know, just us sailing straight onto the quarterfinals. Funny enough, though, my three-round match review would probably be flattering final scoreline. I think if I hadn't seen the game and I just heard the score, I would think it was one of those, you know, like we've two forms that we've had in the last month or so, maybe like the Chelsea game at Anfield, or like Brentford away, like one of those where we were sublime. I'm not going to complain about us scoring 5 goals away in the European round of 16 match, that's for sure. But I think if you watch the game, 5-1 probably wasn't quite the most accurate indication of how it went over the 90 minutes. Like first half in particular, I felt Sparta Prague were a bit more clinical. You know, we could have been talking about us going in on level terms at half time. It came down to them not taking the chances they got. And a certain Uruguayan in particular, scoring 2 of probably the best goals of his time at Liverpool. If you haven't seen those already, by the way, anyone who's listening in, as soon as we finish listening to this part, go and look up Nunez's goal. You'll thank me for it. I would say, yeah, a bit of a scare when they scored like within a minute of the restart as well. I thought, oh dear, they actually could pull this back. But thankfully, Diaz went up and pretty soon restored a 3-goal advantage. And I kind of felt from there, maybe the belief went down to Sparta. Like the same kind of bravado they were showing the first 50-odd minutes or so seemed to fade, and it was probably comfortable enough for Liverpool in the end. Even though, like I said, 5-1 probably doesn't tell the entire story of how the game itself went. But hey, so like I said, you can't ask much more than coming back to Anfield with a 4-goal lead for the second leg of a tie at this stage of the competition. Like that, we're not talking like a group match. This is like last 16 with some pretty decent teams in this tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you kind of sum it up quite well when you say that you were worried about a comeback when Sparta Prague got a goal, and that kind of reflects probably the chances they were able to create and where Liverpool are going to have a little bit of a wobble. But having said that, you know, thinking about this game before it, I was kind of the view that we might end up seeing something similar to maybe the Toulouse game away from home in the group stages, where Liverpool obviously lost by 1. And part of that was that I thought Liverpool put out a significantly weaker team than they did, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, it just had that feel of kind of intimidating away atmosphere. And if there were to be changes, sometimes the team doesn't have the same, you know, rhythm, the same combination, things like that. And you just wondered if it was going to be one of them where you come away with maybe a result that's a bit frustrating on the night, just because of the combination of circumstances, and then you just say to yourself, we'll be fine at Anfield next week. But really, I mean, that game at Anfield now is going to be something of a non-event, you would think, given the way Liverpool have handled business there, and they obviously deserve credit for the manner in which they've done that. My three-head match review is 1,000 Klopp goals, which is obviously a pretty significant milestone, and it just makes you realise how long Jürgen Klopp's been here, how many matches you've watched with him as the manager, obviously in his last few months now as the boss. But yeah, I mean, Sparta Prague undeniably had big moments within the game. There was a couple of them at 1-0 to Liverpool. There was one from Haraslin, the striker. Keller made the save, Gomez hooked it off the line. Then there was a big block from Canate on Preciado. Another save from Haraslin. And then the ball broke to Bermanchevich, I think his name was, and he couldn't convert the rebound. It came at him quite quickly. But these are all, you know, massive opportunities. And then start of the second, obviously, they do get their goal. I think Bradley, bit of a bizarre one, to be honest. Looking back at it, I think if that's Virgil van Dijk in that situation, he goes with his left foot. But, you know, it's not. And, you know, these things happen. And he obviously just coming into the game as well, maybe you could say, you know, he was a little bit sort of cold, a bit rusty, things like that. And then there was a chance soon after that as well. I mean, the point you make, Liam, about are they going to get back into the game, where Keller has to come out quickly and make a save again from Haraslin, who, off the top of my head, I think has a really good goal scoring record this season. I think I saw on Twitter when this tie was kind of drawn. But Liverpool able to deny him tonight. The final stats, I mean, 2.52 XG for Liverpool, only 0.86 for Sparta Prague, which is surprisingly low, especially considering they had four big chances in the game to Liverpool's five, seven shots on target and 11 shots overall. But Liverpool with 20 attempts, 11 on target and 63% possession. Definitely deserved to win the game. But like you say, probably the margin flattered them. But ultimately, the key is that they've got the job done here, and they can start to think about the last eight is competition, which is where they could face someone who's, you know, obviously closer to their level. Might talk a little bit later on about how those draws are shaping up, but we've still got some ties going on in the 8 o'clock kickoffs as we record this. Let's talk about the team selection then, Liam. Big debate or big uncertainty coming into this game. Was Klopp going to field a very weak team with an eye on Man City and just try and kind of limit the damage here, if you like, and then do the job at Anfield next week? Or was he going to go strong, try and kill it, make changes, not only within the game tonight, but also next week? Obviously, there was a bit of an injury issue as well. We'll talk about that in a second. But first off, what did you think of the 11 that Klopp picked in the sort of situation of Liverpool season?
Yeah, it was probably stronger than I was expecting, particularly in the context of Man City coming up in 3 days' time. And as you say, with the way the injuries have been over the last couple of months or so. And I suppose, like, at the same time, I can understand why Klopp just wouldn't want to sack off the Europa League either, because it's a competition that we have a very realistic chance of winning. You know, obviously, it could potentially be his final game for us if we don't reach the FA Cup final, so I could understand what he said. And I mean, he's not stupid. I mean, he knows better than anyone, like, what's the best that ever he can put out in the context of, like, other fixtures, while still having what he was feeling to be a strong enough team to get the job done tonight. And they did that with flying colours on the scoreboard. Like, I know people will say, oh, why did Canate start, in the context of him going off with the injury. I can understand that point of view, but it's the classic case of being wiser after the fact. You kind of look and say, okay, what was the alternative? Did we start Van Dijk and risk him getting an injury? Was there a case maybe Gomez to have started a centre back, and maybe Brandy in the right, as it were? Yeah, I didn't have any great complaints with the team selection, in truth, and I think he kind of managed it well. I think, like, subbing off the likes of Nunes and Gomez, like, at halftime or just after halftime was probably sensible too, especially if they had any. Again, we have to wait and see probably until tomorrow what the outcome is with those lads. But I suppose if there was any even 5% of a niggle, then it was right at that moment to just say, okay, lads, you've done your job for tonight. I'll get a few lads on, get them. You know, value of minutes as well. A good, I think, made the right call with Salah. So again, probably easy to say now, but no harm to see him coming through whatever 15, 20 minutes or whatever it was towards the end. Again, got a perfectly good goal that was moved out for some curious reason, but thankfully it didn't drastically alter the course it's in high by any means. So I think in fairness to Klopp, and like I said, he knows the right 11 to have put out with one eye on City, as you saw with him. Mean, that's why Van Dijk was left out, that's why Szoboszlai, Salah didn't start. You can be sure that there was elements of that start lineup where he definitely had one eye on Sunday while still picking a strong enough team to get the business done. And I suppose he might be looking ahead as well, because as we're talking now, like, the tie is more or less done. So he now has the luxury of next Thursday, you know, being able to make a few changes and keep lads fresh for United on Sunday week, get over that game, hopefully get the result there, and then it's off for internationals for a couple of weeks. So no real complaints from me about the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it. I mean, if you just go through sort of the bench, in terms of the players who were available and could have started, Bobby Clark, Connor Bradley, Simikas, maybe sort of McConnell getting in there as well. A couple of other youngsters like Gordon and Kumas, who obviously had a couple of minutes recently. So we did have the options to sort of go really light with his team selection. Didn't choose to do that, and I don't have too many qualms with that. And I do think it was well managed within the game for the most part. One thing I was thinking as well, as you were talking there, is maybe there's an element of kind of sending messages to the squad, because I think that if he puts in all those young players for this game, and, you know, regardless of what the result is, then you kind of send a message to the team where it's like, okay, this competition isn't a priority for us. And relative to the Premier League, it's not, we know that, but I kind of think subconsciously, if you're going into the next tie in the quarterfinals and you are playing a much stronger team, as you know, Liverpool almost definitely will, then if you're in the back of your mind, like, this isn't our priority just because of the message that you've been sent by the manager implicitly there. I think that's the kind of recipe for issues that some other teams have run into in this competition, when you think of, you know, Tottenham getting knocked out by Dynamo Zagreb or Arsenal by Olympiacos or something like that. You know, that's sometimes how banana skins and upsets come about in this competition, I think. So I do wonder if there's elements of all that in there. You've obviously mentioned Canate's injury, substituted 5 minutes into the second half after going down. Basically, it's hard to kind of fully establish what happens. They're on the attack, Sparta Prague. Canate is running back, and then he just completely loses momentum and pulls up slightly, but it's not clear if it's kind of he's done his hamstring or he's just feeling general discomfort and not running full tilt. Hard to say. Klopp said after the match that it was a precaution, which sounds encouraging, but he also said if Canate carried on, it might have become a problem, and isn't sure if he's going to be available for Sunday or not. Obviously, you've got to consider as well the fact that this is a player with a significant injury history, which always makes you a bit more worried about things like this. And I think you make a fair point about Van Dijk, Liam, but also, obviously, we know Canate is inherently more susceptible. So a couple of questions on this. First off, should Klopp have brought him off at half-time and just done a half each of the two centre-backs? Second of all, I saw someone on Twitter say they would rather have lost this game 1-0 and had a clean bill of health heading into Man City than 1-5-1 and had an injury concern. So where would you side it in that particular equation?
So to answer your first question, I suppose, yeah, I did seem curious that, like, he make a substitution at half time and then make two, albeit with one enforced, you know, 5 minutes into the second half. Probably a little bit of curiosity that would, like, again, look, it's far be it for me to tell Jurgen Klopp how to do his job, but it did seem, like, maybe a tad peculiar, and hopefully it's not something which will cost us going forward. As for second view, I get why someone might put that forward, because even if we lost 1-0 tonight, there is still a good chance of us getting the business done in the second leg. But I still don't quite subscribe to it. Because you know, ultimately football is about winning matches, and you know, that's where we have a squad. That is true. I mean, even though obviously I'm hoping Kanate will be able to play on Sunday. If he isn't, like, I wouldn't be too disenchanted with Jarrod Kwanzaa starting, especially as Van Dijk alongside him. Kwanzaa, I mean, he's young. Yes, he's coming up against one of the best attacks in world football, but nothing has faced him so far since his promotion to the first team. So, and when you look at some of the lads who have been thrown in against, again, maybe not quite the same caliber of opposition as Man City, but you know, still not exactly playing the dog and duck either. And they've, you know, acquitted themselves really well. So, yeah, I wouldn't quite go along with either taking a 1-0 defeat for Kanate Fish. I mean, come on, we won 5-1, so that's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's actually, you look at it originally and you're like, hang on, but I think it's actually quite a compelling point, to be honest, because I think if Liverpool had lost that game 1-0, then they'd still be overwhelming favourites to progress, especially with that Anfield factor next week. And obviously the game against City at the weekend is, you know, the biggest game of the season. There's no way of getting around that. So, especially with all the injuries Liverpool had already, you didn't want any more concerns. That was probably the main thing tonight, to be honest. So I can definitely see where they're coming from. And on Kanate, I mean, I think the way he's played in so many big games and against some of the best attackers, he would be a huge miss. And Kwanzaa, you know, has done exceptionally well this season, been a huge revelation. But I don't think it's disrespectful to him in any way to say that you'd be sort of worried about him in a match of that magnitude. He's played, for the most part, against either weaker Premier League teams or teams in the Europa League will have a big advantage, or in the domestic clubs and things like that. We're talking here about possibly the best team in the world, and obviously the best striker in the world as well, probably in Erling Haaland. So it would be a massive loss for Liverpool, in my opinion. But you mentioned how it would be sort of Kwanzaa coming in. Is there an argument instead to slide Gomez into that centre-back position? He was brilliant against Man City last year in the home game. Liverpool won 1-0 despite being miles off them in the table. I think he won man of the match or was certainly a contender for it. Slide Gomez across and play Bradley at right back if Kanate can't play. Or would you be more inclined to stick Gomez on the right still and just put the faith in Kwanzaa?
That's actually quite a good question now that you throw it out there, because you'd always forget, you know, with the way Gomez has played this season, that he probably would still be primarily a centre back. It's just that he's pretty much filled in where we've needed him this season. But you know, it definitely is a possibility that as you would say, considering his performance against City in this fixture last season, and that, as he has obviously far more experience than the likes of Kwanzaa, that I think he definitely starts somewhere in that back four. Whether it's in the middle or on the right is, I suppose, the toss of a coin question. It's not a decision I'd like to be making for sure, because as I say, do we sacrifice or do we take O'Connor Bradley, who really, apart from one unlucky moment tonight, hasn't put a foot wrong, and you know, it probably is that bit more, even though you're probably only commit to the first team on a regular basis later in the season than Kwanzaa, has more experience overall when you consider, you know, that he had a full season under his belt at Bolton and that he's won the senior caps in Northern Ireland. It's probably not one I have an answer for at the moment, but I definitely think Gomez 100% starts on Sunday in one capacity or another.
Yeah, I think that I would probably lean Bradley right back, Gomez centre back, just because I think a weakness at centre back is always more likely to cost you in a game like that than a weakness at full back. But obviously, it's marginal. And I'm going to put it on my Twitter as a poll, because I think that I've actually come up with a decent question there. Lineup wise for the weekend, hopefully it's not relevant and Klopp has Konate to pick from, because Liverpool will be down to Van Dijk, Kwanzaa and Gomez as their centre-back options if Konate is out for a little bit of time, because obviously Matip is already out for the season. Anyway, we've gone sort of 20 minutes through this podcast now without talking about Nunez in any significant detail. So let's give him the credit he deserves. Two goals tonight, Liam, which means he surpasses his tally from last season. I think he got 14 last year and he's now got 16 in all competitions. I mean, what did you make of his performance tonight and those couple of goals that he got?
yeah, pretty sensational. One of his best nights in Liverpool shirt, for sure. And I think it's funny how he's, for about the first 18 months or so in England, he has this reputation as, you know, someone whose finishing was erratic, to put it mildly. Yes, he has had his shockers, like the one against, I think that one against Luton at Kenilworth Road always sticks out for me. But then again, you also look at, I mean, the finish against West Ham in Anfield earlier in the season, even like the way he took it, the fact that he even got some flack for how he took the goal against Brentford, saying, why is he chipping the goalkeeper? Well, the end justifies the means. He made Fleck look like a bit of a dope, like with the way he took that finish. And even with the header, like, I know the header probably wasn't quite as aesthetically spellbinding as some of the other goals he's gotten this season, but joins in the technique to, you know, just to read McAllister's ball perfectly and, you know, get the jump, just get the perfect contact on it to force it over the line. Again, you don't do that if you're not a good number nine. And as there are two goals tonight, I'm struggling to even find the words to properly convey how good they were. Like that, I mean, some people are saying, oh, the Spartan goalkeeper should have been better with Nunes' first goal. Possibly he could have, but I mean, take that away from the finish. It was, like I said, if you saw like an English player, like a Saka or a Grealish pulling that off, Sky Sports would be coming out with half-hour documentaries on it tomorrow morning. Like it was that good. Even a second goal as well, like, you know, another fantastic finish. He's really, really come into his own, I think, over the last 2 months or so in particular. And just when we've really needed him as well, obviously with Salah missing, like, pretty much apart from a couple of games, he's been out since January. Jota, again, injury came at a terrible time, like, when he was in flying form. That's when it's in those situations that you're really looking to those who are left still standing to fill the void. And Nunes has done that in spades over the last month or so in particular. So can't speak highly enough of him. I think he's really silencing his many, many critics over the last 5-6 games in particular. And as I said, like, long may continue. I mean, I don't want to say this in case it jinxes him, but I think on form, if he stays fully fit, it's inevitable he passes 20 and quite possibly maybe 25 goals by the time the season is done.
Yeah, I think that's a very good target for him from here. And also a slightly different subplot on that. He'd also get 15 goals and 15 assists in all competitions as well. He's obviously done one of those already, which would be a very unique feat as well. Showing the kind of all-round contribution he's made this season. Actually, in 2024 as well, and this is from Opta on Twitter, I saw this, he's been directly involved in 12 goals in 12 games in all competitions. That's 8 goals, 4 assists, and that's the joint most of any Premier League player across all competitions since the 1st of January, level with Kevin De Bruyne. So he's having a particularly strong stretch of form. Obviously, this season started well for him. Then he had a bit of a barren run between kind of, I think, late October and Christmas. But since then, he's picked back up to top form again and making some crucial contributions for Liverpool. I think the second goal is better than the first goal, because as much as it's a good strike for the first one from a long way out and he catches it really well, I think that obviously the goalkeeper does completely make a mess of it. I mean... I know this is obviously very different to your take on it, Liam, but I do think he should have saved it. You could say that the strike itself kind of outwitted the goalkeeper, but it was a bit of a strange one. Certainly looked very good when it kind of first went in. Yeah, and then the second one, I mean, obviously McAllister plays the ball out to him and it's bouncing. And that, I think, is one of the cleanest finishes he's produced in a Liverpool shirt. It's just such a lovely goal to watch that. And it kind of felt, because you alluded to, a little bit uncharacteristic for a player who's snatched at so many opportunities and where his technique has deserted him on so many occasions. But, you know, that was as good a finish as you'll see from that kind of opportunity. So a wonderful goal for him. And, you know, you can't really argue with the top numbers from him this season. And it looks like, fingers crossed, he can play a big part in Liverpool hopefully winning a couple more trophies this season. And could just keep him fit as well, obviously, with everybody seemingly getting injured at the moment. Who else impressed you tonight then, Liam?
I'm going to have to say McAllister again. Like you just touched it there, like the pass he gave for Lewis, the second goal, just delightful. He reminds me of, say, like the conductor of an orchestra is always the way I'd put him, especially over the last the 2 weeks in particular. Like I think that this time last year we talked about midfield as being such a problem position for Liverpool, and you remember the options we had. There wasn't anyone there apart from Thiago, who whenever he was available to play, there wasn't really anyone else who you kind of felt how should I say could make something exciting happen from midfield. Like they all seemed to be that like this the prototype of like the hard carrier who'd, you know, work there all day but they couldn't split a defence or never really kind of created a whole lot for the players in front of him. McAllister has just changed all of that. He's brought so much life to the midfield. I mean, sensational on Saturday with the pass where Nunes is winning goal and again, they set him up brilliantly again this evening. And I also want to credit Harvey Elliott too, because he's probably, apart from Kelleher, off the top of my head, he's probably been like one of the real constants in this team over the last maybe 5-6 games or so. He's probably been waiting, because we had this discussion earlier in the season, like, Joe, is he better off the bench? Joe, does he deserve to start more often? I suppose, like, probably through necessity more than anything, he's getting that consistent run of starts now in the team, and he's making the most of it. I thought he was fantastic tonight. You know, terrorised the Sparta defence when he burst forward the ball. I've seen some saying 2 assists, some saying 3. It probably depends on what statistical sort of websites you consult. But either way, definitely a man who mightn't get as many headlines. Nunes is obviously going to get the headlines, and rightly so. But I have to say, Elliott was excellent for Liverpool tonight. And again, I'm going to give Kelleher credit too for coming up with a couple of important saves, like when we needed it, when the match certainly was anything but comfortable. So, I think those three along with Nunes.
Yeah, I was going to mention McAllister and Kelleher as well. They were the two that sort of stood out for me. Just on Elliott quickly, first of all, I think one of his better performances from the start of a game, definitely. We know that on occasion he has struggled to make the same level of impact when he has actually been in the 11, but that wasn't the case tonight. McAllister, obviously, not only the assist for Nunez, but winning the penalty with some, you know, excellent kind of pressing to get the ball off Sorensen in the box. And then, obviously, heavy touch, he pounces in there and gets brought down, puts the penalty away, and kind of goal Jurgen Klopp will love, even if it obviously is in the end a penalty. You know, the situation in terms of Liverpool being right there to pick up on any error and hounding the opposition defenders, sort of a vintage Klopp goal in his quite particular way. His numbers looked really good again tonight. 65 minutes he played, good to see him get a bit of a rest towards the end. 94% passing accuracy, 3 chances created, 4 out of 5 ground duels won, and 3 fouls drawn. So he ran that game tonight, definitely. And Kelleher, 6 saves again. Probably the biggest, well, I suppose he's played in a couple of finals, definitely the biggest Premier League game of his career. One of the biggest games, full stop, at the weekend. Has an opportunity to make himself sort of Liverpool legend of sorts if he produces a good performance in that one and it goes on to be a meaningful game in a good way for the Reds. So we'll see how he goes in that one. But I think he's done a lot to build up people's confidence in him over the past few weeks. And to be honest, Alisson seems to throw in the odd howler when he plays Man City. So he's lowered the bar a little bit heading into that one as well. But those would be the two that I'd mention. So yeah, quickly before we finish, let's just have a quick look at how the landscape looks in the Europa League. Liverpool will basically play, you would think, a B team next week, maybe with 3-4 big names in there just to keep things steady, who can then come off. And like Liam said already, they know that they've got Man United in the cup and they know that they've got a chance to protect some of their players, which they obviously didn't fully do tonight, heading into that game and then the international break afterwards. So in terms of other teams who are basically through, Roma have thrashed Brighton 4-0. So they're, you know, they've got 1¾ feet in the last eight. Brighton, I thought, would have been a bad matchup for Liverpool, actually, in this competition. I know they've probably regressed this season compared to last, and they're having a few sort of results that make you wince a little bit. But I do think that Liverpool have struggled against them in the past few years. And they seem to be able to, you know, the Zerbi and Potter before them seem to be able to kind of spot the holes maybe in Liverpool's setup. So I wouldn't have fancied that as a tie. So like that probably suits Liverpool. Leverkusen were actually 2-0 down against Karabag. So there was potentially a bit of an upset brewing there, but they scored twice in the last 20 minutes to get a draw. So they'll probably get through now. I think most people would say the second best team in this competition after Liverpool, that could still be a huge tie. Aside from that, Marseille virtually through, and they've beaten Villarreal 4-0 in the first leg of their tie. So, I mean, so it's Liverpool, Roma, and Marseille, you look at and say, definitely safe now. The rest of it's still kind of up for grabs. Milan still have work to do. They've beaten Slavia Prague 4-2 tonight, but they've still got to go to Prague away from home. West Ham have a 1-0 deficit to overturn against Freiburg. Benfica currently at 2-2 against Rangers, so that one's definitely in the balance. But if you're Liverpool, you're feeling pretty good about your chances in this competition now, heading into obviously that second leg next week, which should just be a sort of just a matter of getting through those 90 minutes and then moving on. Because they have beaten Sparta Prague 5-1 in the first leg of this Europa League tie. And obviously continue their momentum heading into the vital game against Manchester City at the weekend. One of the biggest games any of us have sort of experienced. Similarities to the game a couple of years ago, obviously, except this time it is at Anfield. And obviously that will be the focus of our next episode. So make sure you join us for that one. It's going to be, there could be a whole range of emotions that we're feeling when we start recording that one. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, thanks to Liam for joining me. Thanks very much, everyone, for listening. If you have enjoyed it and if you've been enjoying our recent episodes, please do give us a 5-star review if you get the chance. And all the relevant links are in the episode description, including mine and Liam's Twitter and the podcast email address. But yeah, like I said, we will see you after the game against Manchester City, when hopefully we've got a very important win to celebrate. But it's going to be very much fingers crossed and biting the nails until then. Take care.